Hi there, and welcome back to Hugo's There 2.0, and this is another Seth's Picks episode, where in the recent past, we did one of these episodes, and it wasn't even science fiction. This time, it is science fiction, and furthermore, it's an award winner, kind of, because the author here is a Nobel-winning author, and that author is José Saramago, and the novel is Blindness, which was published in 1995. So, the novel was originally published in Portuguese, and so I had the perfect person in mind for talking about this, not because he speaks Portuguese, but because he's doing a study of science fiction from around the world, and that is Andy Perry. Hi, Andy.
Hey, Seth. How are you?
Good, good. And Andy and I actually got to meet in Scotland this year, which was fun. He was one of the chosen few who attended the Take Me to Reader live recording.
Yeah, no, it was really good fun.
Yeah, it was an intimate crowd.
Yeah.
So how's it going with science fiction around the world? Still plugging away? I think you were in the 20s with the countries covered?
Yeah. So I'm probably in the 30s now. Nice. And reading a lot more African science fiction, which has been really cool. And that was the great thing about Worldcon. There's so many panels and table talks from African authors. Mm. And their take on science fiction is really quite different to Western stuff.
I mean, definitely at Worldcon, I mean, the panels that you could get there were extremely diverse. I mean, so many different topics. And I didn't get to go to the one about the African science fiction.
Yeah, no, it was great. And the best thing I went to was something on, it was on the laws of space and how it impacts kind of hunter-gatherer tribes in Africa.
Interesting.
And it was just called the laws of space. Hmm. So I thought this was going to be like, you know, the three laws of robotics and kind of more science fiction-y kind of fiction-y. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't. It was done by a lawyer who specializes
in it. So it was international law kind of stuff.
Yeah. But, and space law and how no government can own a celestial body. But that doesn't include private companies.
Right.
And it was absolutely fascinating. And I kind of sat there going, I'm in the wrong thing. I didn't want to come to this. But the lady that hosted it was just brilliant, and it was fascinating.
Nice. There was some of the space law covered in A City on Mars, which was one of the related works.
Okay.
So talking about history with this book, this is one that I did you not know about this until I sent you a ping about it?
Never heard of it. Never heard of José either.
José, they pronounce it.
I say José.
In Portuguese.
That's because I'm doing Spanish rather than Spanish.
Exactly.
Portuguese.
I learned this week how to pronounce the name.
Okay. So,
and I'm probably still not getting it quite correct. But they do pronounce the J differently.
As a J. Okay.
Yeah. Good. Not quite a J. It's like a J, kind of. You know, you have a name like Juan, which is their equivalent to Juan.
Yeah.
I discovered this one from the library, and I think I saw a trailer for the movie when it came out.
Yeah.
And I don't remember, I guess it must have come out in 2008, 2009, and looked up the movie and saw that it was based on a novel, and then saw that the novel was from a Nobel-winning author, and I thought, well, I haven't read many Nobel-winning authors, and so I picked up the book, and I almost quit it for a reason, and we'll talk about it, but ultimately got really sucked into it and really, really enjoyed it, and then I reread it about 10 years ago when it came by as a cheap book on the Nook. And then this time I had it from Audible just cause I thought that'd be an interesting way to take it in. It is a different experience, and we'll talk about that as well. I did say at the top that this is a science fiction novel, and technically, you know, it kind of falls into the post-apocalypse, something like, you know, Day of the Triffids, where, you know, people are struck blind by the astronomical events or whatever. And then the plot happens. Right. But the rest of the plot isn't very science fiction. It's really just about the sociology of the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. This is borderline science fiction.
Yeah. Yeah. And it definitely falls into that literary science fiction, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, I looked up Saramago's work, and he definitely has stuff that straddles the line between fantasy and magical realism. He has one, for instance, that I can't remember, Death with Interruptions, I think is the novel, where essentially death is like, okay, I'm quitting my job. Nobody gets to die. Yeah. And so, you know, that's definitely not just straight fiction, right? There's a fantasy element to it.
Yeah. No, yeah, quite a few of the international books I've read recently, they've all been kind of post-apocalyptic. I was like, is that science fiction? It's just, you know, a war's happened.
Yeah.
You know, why is that science fiction?
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about just like sort of overall impressions on this, and then we'll just kind of dive right into the discussion, because I want to, you know, I definitely recommend the book with some caveats, trigger warnings and that kind of stuff, because there's some pretty rough content in it. There's violence, there's sexual violence, and it does not really flinch away from some of that stuff.
Yeah.
What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, it was dark. But I quite like dark stuff. I don't like really graphic stuff. And I think this was on the, you know, the more graphic side of things, which doesn't appeal to me. Yeah. So it wasn't a comfortable read.
Yeah.
It was, it's not, you know, I like aliens and spaceships and laser fights and those kind of things. That's why I like science fiction.
Yeah.
So reading this was challenged me personally, and it's a book I wouldn't have naturally picked up. So, you know, you've expanded my... my book vocabulary.
Right.
So it's dark, but I really like the way everything's really well described. Mm-hmm. You know, he's clearly, obviously if he's awarded a Nobel Prize, he's a great writer.
Mm-hmm.
The content itself was challenging.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, when you talk about like reading dark things that are about alien invasions and that kind of stuff, right? There's an enemy that you can focus against there, right? Where in this, the enemy is sort of human nature.
Yeah.
And the way we don't care for the marginalized and the way we can be so indifferent. Let's talk just briefly about the plot of the book. There's essentially an outbreak. It's almost a pandemic novel. I can't remember if we mentioned it in that episode. There's this outbreak of what they call the white sickness, because people go blind, but they don't see dark. They describe it as, you know, a thick fog or a mist, right? And it just starts with one guy driving his car and all of a sudden he goes blind, and then everyone kind of who he touches becomes blind. And it kind of focuses around this doctor's office where he goes to the eye doctor. And then everyone in that office ends up going blind as well. And then bad things happen, you know, because the government overreacts and starts interning people in essentially camps. You know, they put them in an old asylum. They put them in old arenas and things like that. And then they just sort of throw them to the wolves. And say, look, if anything bad happens, you deal with it. We'll provide some food, but we're not gonna come in there for any reason.
No, they're kind of protecting them, and it's called military ran.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was really oppressive. You've gone blind, you're quarantined, and that's it. We're just gonna throw food over a fence.
Yeah, like it's the place where the main characters are interned, and I want to talk about the characters because it's one of the interesting things about the style of the novel. They're interned in this old abandoned asylum, which, you know, is unfortunate, and it's not really equipped to handle the number of people that get put there. And then, you know, this is where the sociology part comes in, where there's more than one ward in here, and it happens that one of the wards is closer to where the food is delivered, and if they decide, you know what, we're not going to share the food, the government isn't going to step in, and they have to handle it themselves.
Yeah, and that was it. It was kind of, you know, very much Lord of the Flies. And
yeah, exactly.
It reverted very quickly to, you know, self-interest and tribalism and all those things.
Mm-hmm.
It was fascinating to read. And some of it you kind of go, this is really, you know, it's difficult to read, and you feel that people are just horrible.
Mm-hmm.
But then some of it was so unbelievable. You know, that, you know, I couldn't relate. I couldn't say this. I couldn't see how people would go that bad and that depraved that quickly. So, which made it slightly easier, because then it was quite clearly fiction. It wasn't, it felt less real.
Mm.
So, which helped.
Yeah.
made it easier to read because it was less real. And obviously with all the blindness and the white blindness.
I took it one
step away from reality.
See, I'm not sure that I agree that it didn't feel real, because I can see this kind of thing happening, right? Where there was a joke from a comedian who was talking about apocalypse preppers, you know, people who are like, you know, have big closets full of food and stuff. And the guy said, all you're doing is collecting stuff for someone stronger.
Yeah.
And more ruthless, right? If somebody comes along and they're, you know, they're not about humanity as a whole surviving, they're about themselves surviving, and they come and take your stuff, then what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Let's see. let's talk about the style of the novel. And this is where I wanted to talk about. I highly recommend, if you're going to read this book, reading it in print. However, based on what I describe, you may decide, no, I'll go audio. Because Saramago has a style, which I understand is in several of his novels. I wondered if it was unique to this one, but I've looked it up and it seems to be the thing he does, where he very much limits punctuation and line breaks, quotation marks. And so there's just this breathless quality to the way it goes by, because you don't even have periods at the end of sentences sometimes. It's just a comma, and then it keeps on going. And characters will be talking, and it's just offset with a comma, and that's all. There's no quotation marks. There's nothing to kind of call out that there's dialogue going on. And so it requires a level of attention that I think some people are like, I'm not ready for that. And so if you're not ready for that, I'd say, well, okay, the audio will serve you better, because you're going to miss that. But you're also missing, to my mind, the level of immersion that you get where it pulls you into the plight of these people.
Yeah, I'd say, because I read probably 50-50. Mm. I read most of the book in print and then listened to a lot of it on Audible as well. Mm. But when I was reading it in print, you know, I couldn't just read for 10 minutes and then put it down, like a chapter before bed or a few pages before bed or something like that. You had to sit there and commit a good half an hour to an hour,
yeah,
to sit and read it, to get into just the way it's written. Like you said, it's a challenging, physically it's a challenging read. Mm-hmm. But once you get into the pace and the way he writes, it's great. And it's really draws you in and is really immersive. And that was, you know, clearly his crafting of physical writing is brilliant. It's great.
Yeah. From this part forward, I'm just going to say we're going to be in spoilers. And we'll start talking about more of the specifics of the plot. I like these conversations and not be super, super structured. Just cause you know, this is a book that I've really enjoyed and I just want to talk about it with Andy. One of the other interesting things is that the characters, there are no named characters in the novel. So it does not pass the Bechdel test.
Yeah, when I first started reading it, I think I was in like the first chapter, I'd like messaged you and said, like, no one's got a name yet. And you were like, don't expect any names.
Yes.
I was like, okay. And that was really, and that also found it hard to relate to the character that was the doctor or the lady with the glasses. Yeah. And it was just like, But again, you break that barrier and you just go, oh, right, that's the lady in the glasses. And
right, right. That's fine. the boy with the squint and the old man with the eye patch, right? And it's fascinating, too, in a book about blindness, that so many of the character, you know, not names, but the way the characters are described are something physical, right? Something visual, right? The girl with the dark glasses, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, there are, of course, like the blind hoodlums. That's what they call the other ward that won't share the food.
And
the doctor and the doctor's wife and the first blind man and the first blind man's wife and the car thief. It's really fascinating. And then even toward the end, when a dog comes in, right? The dog doesn't get a name. It's the dog of tears, right?
And I think that was the only thing, one of the things I didn't like about the book is when they said, oh, blind people don't have names. You know, because I think there was one point where someone said, oh, what's your name? And they kind of almost pointed out that blind people don't have names in this book. And I think that was unnecessary. I think if you could have quite happily left that out and drawn your own conclusion to that and never had to comment on that conversation when someone goes, oh, what's your name? Because that would have happened all the time.
Yeah.
That'd been the first thing you do is someone new comes in, you're like, hey, who are you? And that never happened on any of the first meetings apart from once. And then they kind of made this comment about blind people not having names. So it's just like,
It does kind of set you back at one remove, because you think in conversations, right, people would need a way to refer to each other.
That doesn't
really happen here. And it's part of the style. And I still really appreciate it. It's interesting.
Yeah, it's different. And you know,
but
yeah, that's why I'm glad I read the book, because there's so many different things about this book that I've never come across in any other book.
And so you have, the lack of the character names and then the lack of the punctuation in the novel. And so like you, lots of times you're like, I'm pretty sure I know who's talking, but I'm not totally sure. And to me, that was like, would that be what it's like? Or do you like, would you learn people's voices well enough so that you would know? And I'm not sure. And I'm not sure it was going for that either.
No. I don't know. I've not done any research into, you know, read any papers on him and this book, you know, any. So I've just read it as a book and not done any background into it.
There is a direct sequel to this novel called Seeing, and I haven't watched it yet. I haven't read it yet.
Oh, okay.
That
would be interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially as, you know, the last line.
Yeah.
Almost isn't the last line of the book, but almost the last part of the book.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah.
I've got the book in front of me. Was it the last line? No, it's not the last line, but yeah, that last twist.
Yeah. One of the quotes that I liked early on, where the doctor, you know, he's fascinated by the fact that he sees this patient and he's like, well, there's no lesions. There's no obvious reason for you to be blind. And so he's approaching this from a very medical standpoint. And then the next day he goes blind, right? And then he starts contacting the health authorities. And, you know, he gets basically stuck talking to a mid-level bureaucrat somewhere who's not really interested in helping him and doesn't really care. And the doctor says, this is the stuff we're made of, half indifference and half malice. And is very much describes the life in the wards, right? Because the indifference is on the part of the government, and then the malice is on the part of the other, the blind hoodlums. What else do you want to talk about?
I suppose we could go into the more triggering stuff.
Yeah.
The gory side of things and, my issues with that.
Yeah, because at some point the blind hoodlums, the people in the, I don't know, Ward 3, I think it was, the food is being dropped near where they are. And so they decide, you know what, we're going to keep the food. If you want the food, you have to buy it.
Yeah.
And so they shake everybody down for all their possessions. Not that possessions mean anything.
No. And this is like, if you're totally blind, you're not going to worry about having someone else's watch or someone else's cash.
Right.
And so the first guy to go blind's wife could still see, you know.
No, not the first guy, the doctor's wife.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah, it was the doctor's wife. So the doctor's wife could still see, but she was pretended to be blind to get into the asylum with all the other blind people, and so she could stay with her husband. You know, why she was not just collecting it all up and just hiding it, it must be very easy to hide something from someone who's blind or a group of people that are totally blind.
Yeah.
So that bit for me just seemed unrealistic, or I couldn't empathize with that. I was just like, no, that wouldn't happen. No, and because this book is written so realistically, you kind of plot holes like that really, not a plot hole, but something that I couldn't find realistic. I was just like, no, that wouldn't happen.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, she didn't reveal the fact that she could see for a long time until deep in the novel, right?
Even I think that was when she was outside. I think it was back when they went back to her home.
I think it was earlier than that, because it was okay. I think it was essentially when they had to go to war. But she did hide one thing, if you recall. She hid the scissors.
She hid the scissors.
Not that they were necessarily a valuable. And the interesting thing too is on the side of the blind hoodlums, they have somebody in their ward who was born blind.
Yes.
And so he has an advantage of being of a comfort level with being blind and tools, for instance. Like, I think it said he was an accountant and he had some kind of some way to sort of punch Braille figures in.
Yes. He was.
And so he was the one who was accounting for all the possessions that people were bringing.
Yeah. And I think he had a stick as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So he had a cane. Right. Yeah. And so then, you know, that's where it gets to. They're like, hey, bring us all your stuff and then we'll decide if you deserve food. And then later on, they're like, well, you don't have any possessions left back. So now we want your women. And that's where it gets really, really rough. Because I tend to put myself into this and I think, no, we're not doing this. Okay, this is the time we fight. It's interesting because the women get a fair amount of agency, right? Where essentially they decide, yes, we're going to go. And it's quite emasculating to the men who are left behind.
That was a really, strange, again, another really quite disturbing thought pattern that went through those scenes. The men were left where their women had gone.
Mm-hmm. And you know, one of the women is very badly mistreated and ends up dying. And the movie actually does a good job of, I won't say a good job, but it, it emphasizes that part a little better. There's some change to the wording that I thought were really effective. And we can talk about the movie. Have you watched it?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, because I couldn't remember if we were doing this for Hugo's There or Take Me to Your Reader.
So right.
I'll watch the movie just in case. And yeah, it was good to watch. And you know, it was interesting to watch the movie as well.
Yeah, it's quite a straight adaptation as well. But there's the one of the blind hoodlums comes over and says, you know, there's one lady who was here the other night who was kind of a dead fish. Don't bring her this time. And and that's when the doctor's wife says, well, she died. That's not really a big deal. She was kind of a dead fish. And you can see on the face of the blind accountant that he's like, oh crap, we might have screwed something up here. And yeah, you know, like you say, right, the how realistic is this that entire ward would go along with it? And on the other hand, like, you know, we see in politics, right, a demagogue arises and is able to sway people over to their side and make them do things that you wouldn't think people would do.
Maybe that's self-preservation, that we're trying to think that we wouldn't be like this in those scenarios. That we're, you know, that we're better than the people in the book.
Yeah, and it's worth mentioning that the main hoodlum, I can't remember what the, if he ever got a name, or a label anyway. You'd think I would know. I've read it three times, but he had a firearm, right? And
yes, yeah.
And that's one of those things where even when the doctor goes over to deliver their goods, right, and tries to argue, no, you owe us the proper amount of food, and gets threatened with the gun, and then he regrets that he didn't try to take the gun away. But it's the kind of thing where in the moment, right, your survival instinct kicks in, and you're not thinking of anyone but yourself.
Yeah, I think that's one of my favorite points in the book as well. I think that when there's a conflict and they start shooting wildly, and the doctor's wife, you know, starts, you know, raising hell and giving him lots of abuse, and he goes, "I'll remember your voice," and she says, "I'll remember your face."
Yes, and he's like, "What? Like, what?"
And it was just and everyone's kind of like, "Hey," and it was like, you know, she didn't reveal that she could see, but it was just it sowed the seeds of doubt. I thought that was a very clever part of the book. And I really enjoyed that because it showed that kind of almost that, you know, stepping up and, you know, taking control and becoming powerful and all those things. I thought that was a real, you know, key change point for that ward.
And, you know, she had that role of taking care of everyone already. And even to the point where, like, her husband finds his way to the bed of the woman with dark glasses, right? The girl with dark glasses. And they sleep together, and, you know, she sees it, and she just is very compassionate about the whole thing, which I thought was interesting.
Strange, but yes.
Another
weird part of the story, but it happened.
I think the movie does actually talk about this a little bit, because the doctor is played by Mark Ruffalo, and, you know, he's basically saying, look, I'm not a man anymore, right? Like you deal with me like a child, right? You're wiping my backside and trimming my, and shaving for me, and you know all these things, and it's, can't live like this. And so I don't know if that led to that situation, but I was impressed with how compassionate she was toward both of them about that.
Yeah, and again, she had choices. She could leave. She could abandon them all if she chose. So she had made that definite choice to stay and take on that role of guide and mother. And
And it was rough too, because says several times she wished that she could not see. She wished that she would lose her sight so she wouldn't have to see what she saw. Because you
she
know,
did wish for that.
Yeah, dead bodies and excrement everywhere, and it was tough. I like the moment where she realizes she's forgotten to wind her watch, and so time for her has ceased to be a thing. And then of course she gets to wind it again when the old man with the eye patch comes in, and he has a radio, and, you know, at the tone it will be 4 o'clock. Winding a watch.
She wasn't sure if it's AM or PM.
Exactly. But
no, it was good. There's some really nice moments of quite, you know, lightness in the whole book. But I just think the whole concept of going white blind was just fascinating. That really I think that was the most science fiction part of the entire book, mm-hmm. is that when you go blind, it's a whiteness rather than a darkness. And I was just thinking like how different and terrifying that would be.
Yeah.
You know, because when you close your eyes, you know what it's like. You know, mm-hmm. it's black and it's dark. But when something's totally white, that's really alien. That's really, you know, something that you're very rare to have that kind of experience.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, unless you're getting whited out in, you know, epic right. snowstorms and things
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, I've experienced that. But, you know, I could still see my hands and things. Yeah. It's just I couldn't see any features. It happens if you go skiing at all, you eventually will find yourself in that kind of situation. You're like, well, I hope there's no big dips in this landscape because I can't see any of the topography. But you just go really slowly, try and get out of the cloud bank. Let's see.
Then I guess the book progresses to them being abandoned. You know, and the they realize that the soldiers are no longer looking after them, no longer providing food.
Right, to the extent that they were ever providing anything, right? Because you have the situation with the car thief, right? Where he's kind of our most perfidious person who's in the ward with the good guys, where he took advantage of the first blind man, stole his car, but he gets his due punishment by also going mm-hmm. blind. And the funny thing is, like, it was, you want to believe that it was a kind impulse where he was just trying to help this guy out, and then he just decided to steal the car. And it kind of positions it that way.
Yeah, it was kind of more, can't think of the word, spur of the moment. You know, it was just kind of like opportunistic.
Yeah,
you taking know, to advantage. Steal the car. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then it turns out that he was a professional car thief.
right. And not a good man, right? Because then when I think they all lined up at some point to try and make a procession down to pick up the food, and he found himself next to the girl with dark glasses, who I think is a sex worker or an escort.
Yeah.
And you know, he discovers that she's curvy and he likes it, and she does not like his advances, and delivers a blow to him that gets infected. Yeah. I think she has heels on or something and stomps on his foot.
That ultimately kills him.
It ultimately kills him, right. Yeah. And that's where the indifference of the government authorities comes in, right? Because here, just some antibiotics and he's fine.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And he does kind of work his way around to apologizing. Right. And the girl with dark glasses is not thrilled that she's killed this man. That was not what she was trying to do. But just the way things have gone, that's the reality that they're in. And he ends up, I think, surprising a soldier and getting shot.
Oh yeah. And the woman with the dark glasses ends up kind of looking after the young lad, the boy with the squint, as well, and, you know, becomes, you know, his foster mum.
Yeah, more or less. And you know, she gives up a lot of her food so that he won't complain. Yeah. That's his main role, is to complain and ask for his mummy.
But yeah, this kind of, everyone has like redemption stories.
Yeah, really, in a lot of ways. And you know, the hero is definitely the doctor's wife, right? She's the one who takes care of them. She's the one who, you know, ends up taking out the bad guy.
That was a brutal scene, a brutal three pages in the book and in the film as well. It was it's good. It was that was good scenes, but tough though. And the thing is, I'd picture that when I read the book, I'd picture the scissors very differently. Mm. So, you know, like scissors, you only see the scissors that they used in the movie for hairdressing. So they're really long and pointy and purely metallic. I was thinking of more of a, like paper scissors, you know, with big plastic handles. And so when I saw them in the film, I was just like, oh.
Yeah. Okay. Those are deadly.
That's a weapon. Yeah. That's not just a.
Yeah, very much. And then she's the one who, you know, when essentially, like you said, right, eventually they're entirely abandoned because the rest of the world has gone to hell. And, you know, all the soldiers have gone blind. And there was the blind are dead, the dead are blind, you know, thing that happens where there's the head of the soldiers who's basically saying, look, step out here, we'll shoot you and that'll solve the problem. And then he goes blind himself and just offs himself. I'm like, well, he was consistent in his convictions.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, the kind of, you know, because this book obviously predates the COVID pandemic.
Yeah, 1995.
But you start drawing parallels. Mm-hmm. You know, this could have happened. This could, you know, in certain places, you know, we were all quarantined and we were all afraid for our lives and people were panic buying and becoming selfish.
Right.
So you can see parallels. So obviously it wasn't as dramatic, but yeah it was tough.
Yeah, and wanting to find someone to blame as well, right? Because you know, when at some point the first blind man and the car thief realize they're in the same ward and, you know, they're both blaming each other, you know, well, you stole my car. Well, you made me blind.
Yeah, it doesn't help.
No, yeah, it doesn't get anyone anywhere.
Those kind of
arguments just aren't fruitful.
Yeah.
Eventually they're abandoned because all the soldiers have gone blind. The government has essentially fallen. And this is where, like, the protests from the blind community were about, you know, would everything really go to hell for this? And I feel like people don't understand how fragile society is.
Mm.
And things can push us over the edge and you know, a pandemic can cause all kinds of upheaval. Something like this, that where all of a sudden all the tools for society are built around being sighted. And when all of a sudden no one's sighted anymore, you know, electrical grids would go down, plumbing would cease to function.
Yeah.
There's more automation now. I feel like it'd have to be very swift action to safeguard anything. And I think the pandemic showed us that swift action is not something that we're really suited to.
No. And we couldn't set up for everyone going blind. No one's got that plan.
Right.
Yeah.
Somebody probably does, some crackpot somewhere does. But yeah, so they venture out into the city looking for a place to stay, right? And this is where you have the hope of the girl with the dark glasses, that her parents are still alive, right? And they make their way back to her place and find the woman who's developed a taste for raw meat and is eating the chickens and rabbits in the back garden.
But they brought the dog. And that's kind of
yes. Fun. Yep. Yes, the dog of tears availed himself of one of the chickens.
Yeah.
But the doctor's wife is able to find in a store that there's a door to a storeroom that the folks have not found, right? Which I found a little surprising, unless there was some kind of lock on it.
Because
you'd think somebody would have gone around the perimeter and gone, oh, there's a doorknob here.
Although
it does show that also after she finds that place, after she finds that storeroom and comes out with food, they do find it, and then a bunch of people fall down to their deaths. So
I couldn't visualize in the book what was happening at that point. Mm. And I think even in the movie, was there a fire? I think in either the book or the movie, there was a fire in the store and it ended up, you know, killing lots and lots of people. And she felt terrible for it because she had essentially opened the door.
Right.
The blind hordes had gone in there and then either fallen or burnt to their deaths.
Mm-hmm.
So she had, again, that, you know, guilt of potentially killing lots of people.
Yeah. I mean, there was definitely a fire in the ward, right? In the asylum.
Maybe that's what I'm confusing things.
I haven't seen the film in a number of years, so I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I didn't rewatch it because we weren't doing Take Me to Your Reader, but I thought we'd talk briefly.
Yeah, I think I finished the book and then watched the film, mm-hmm. you know, almost within a week of each other. So there's a lot of crossover.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and being a pretty straight adaptation, it's, you know, there's not a lot of unique things to the movie that don't exist in the book.
No. It's really faithful.
Yeah. I think the movie Yada Yada is a little bit about some of the power infrastructure and plumbing and that kind of stuff, but where the book seems to be like, you know, people are essentially waiting for it to rain in order to be able to go out and get fresh water to wash and that kind of stuff. And those are lovely scenes actually in the book where it talks about them going out and helping each other wash.
In
the downpour.
Yeah. And the guy with the eye patch having a bath.
Yeah. Cold bath, but still a bath. Yeah. And someone helping him and he's not sure who.
Yes.
Yeah. And there's that kind of lovely relationship that develops between him, you know, he's called the old man with the black eye patch or with the eye patch, right? And the girl with the dark glasses. And you know that there's quite a difference in their ages, but they sort of bond together.
Yes.
And you know, he realizes that, well, if we ever get our sight back, she's going to see that I'm an old wrinkly man and isn't going to want to be with me.
Yeah, but they did have that conversation. And and she was like, yeah, that's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, blind dating, right?
Yeah.
So
that should be the sequel.
Yes.
Well, I guess the last thing is the final thing where they start getting the sight back.
Right.
Yeah, and that's, you know, everyone's, you know, because he was patient zero, he gets his sight back first. So
right.
So the white sickness or the blindness, it has a finite time.
And
I couldn't work out what the timeline of the whole book was, whether it was all in a week or all in a month.
Mm.
But, you know, I'd say it was probably a month or maybe less.
Yeah, I pictured longer than that.
Okay.
Just because, I guess when you think about the fact that they started losing out on the food, you know, I had remembered that happening much earlier, but they're in the wards for quite a while before the blind hoodlums start to assert themselves.
Yeah, okay.
So yeah, I pictured it over the course of a number of months, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't, yeah. Just depends how quickly you think society would degrade.
Right, right. What is the curve? What does the curve look like for the infection rate? Because essentially it presents that it's a virus, right? Or something.
You know, they never worked out why, whether it was just looking at somebody or touching somebody.
Right, right. Was it transmitted visually? That they do talk about that, right? Which doesn't make any sense. But
it's science fiction.
Right, right, right. And so, you know, you kind of wonder if, you know, if the doctor's wife seemed that she was one of the ones who was immune, right? She was like one of the people who would get COVID and never have any symptoms, right?
Yeah.
You'd think there would be some rate of that, right? And you never do get in this book. The book is not at all interested in talking about the situation in the rest of the world.
No.
Because you would think that if this was happening in Lisbon, you know, that perhaps folks in Spain would be like, hey, maybe we should help them out, you know, and, you know, the rest of the world would help out. But it could also be the kind of thing where it was everywhere. Because the first blind man was a businessman, so it's possible he had flown recently and, you know, he was just patient zero in Portugal or wherever. It does not say what city they're in.
No, or what country.
Or what country.
I think. Can't remember. I can't remember any references to countries or.
Yeah, I think at some point there's like a ministry of something that is mentioned, and so I'm like, okay, it's not the United States, because we don't use those terms except for, you know, churches, which I did want to talk about churches as well, because at some point they take shelter in a church, and someone has gone and put blindfolds on all the images.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it wasn't. Yeah. Yeah, because they're saying that the priest may have done this.
Yeah.
Or that was an odd scene.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure if there was, I couldn't think of any religious significance to blindfolded imagery.
I mean, I just looked at it as a religious person. I looked at it as a symbol of a loss of faith, right? You know, when you see sicknesses happening, right, this is, it can be hard to square with omnipotent, all benevolent God, right? That, well, why does this happen then? And it's one of the oldest questions, right? For people who are religious or non-religious, right? I just took it as more or less that kind of thing, where it was, someone was losing their faith.
Yeah, okay. So like Saul, Paul, Damascus, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, really. Oh, interesting. Yeah. There's a blindness aspect to that as well, right?
Yeah, that's, you know, the scales falling from his eyes.
And, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. But the kind of the visual of putting blindfolds or covering the eyes of the, you know, the pictures and the saints. But then I guess, you know, obviously Portugal must be a big Catholic country.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I'm sure they're Catholic. So I think religion's a very big part of everyday life in Portugal. If it must be in Spain, it is, and France and places like that. So I think it's a predominantly Catholic country. Yes, yeah. that was a good point when the patient zero starts to get his eyes, his vision, he gets his vision back, and it happens just as quickly as he lost it.
Right.
And it was then in order of the people that went blind, they started to get their sight back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's pretty much where the book ends as well.
Yeah, yeah. The way it's described too is everything goes dark.
Yes.
And that's the symbol that he's gotten his sight back because the insides of his eyelids are now dark instead of light.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was strange.
I do think that the idea of the white blindness, right, is kind of terrifying, like you said, right? Where it's like, well, how do you sleep when you can't shut the light out? And you know, I grew up in Alaska, so like I was used to going to sleep when it was light outside and waking up when it was light outside during the summer, you know, and the opposite in the winter. But as I've gotten older, I have a lot less tolerance for like a lamp being on when I'm trying to go to sleep.
Yeah.
And right now, you know, with my shoulder situation, I'm in a sling, and so I'm sleeping in an easy chair, under a big lamp, and I've got it on a timer to turn on at a particular time, and I keep going, man, I got to change that timer so it's not quite so damn early, because I wake up and I'm like, oh crap, there's a little lamp shining right in my eyes directly overhead. I reach over to my phone and turn it off. So one of these days I'm going to have to, maybe I'll pick up the sequel and see what I think of it
I'll look that up. Oh, I'll probably get that on Audible.
Yeah.
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 I don't think I'd commit the time to another Sarah Mango book.
Yeah, so, yeah. Yeah. I mean,
I'll have a look on Audible.
Some of his other books do look really interesting, and I haven't read any of them. But this one, when I looked back, it took me a couple weeks to read it. And I tended at that time to be a book a week kind of person. So 2 weeks is a pretty gradual, and it's not a super long book, maybe 300-400 pages.
400.
Okay. Yeah.
No, 300.
Okay. Yeah.
300 pages.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so it is a bit of an undertaking, just because of the way it's written and the commitment that it takes to actually sit down and like, I'm going to read until I come to a stopping point. And you just have no idea when there's going to be a stopping point. Because you can't, even just flipping ahead in the book, sometimes I'd be like, where is the next paragraph break? It's 3 pages over, you know? And then, you know, chapters would just sort of randomly end. There was never really any... you know, we're going to end this chapter on a cliffhanger and move into the next one. No, it was all continuous.
There are little breakaways. There was a breakaway when they were talking about, I think there was a big eye convention with all the eye doctors.
Right.
And then the lead guy was just talking, oh, this isn't such a big problem. And then he went blind on stage.
Right.
And so there are little snippets of what's happening
in the wider world
outside of this core group of characters. So that's about the only time you can put the book down. When it breaks to another snippet, but they're quite short. It might be a paragraph at the beginning of the chapter.
Yeah. I think I'm about done with my notes.
Yeah. And then the only other thing is that the doctor's wife suddenly goes blind at the end.
Is that the way you read it?
Yeah.
That's not how I read it.
Because she said it, and now it's my turn.
Huh.
I thought that was the big twist. I thought then she went blind.
I've never taken that away from the ending. Now I'm going to have to look.
Oh, wow.
I thought that she was going blind, but
yeah,
was not.
It's not. I don't think it's explicit, but...
It's interesting in the novel that I have, it doesn't even have, you know, on my e-reader, it doesn't even have chapter breaks.
No. Yeah, there's no...
It says, right...
I'm on the last paragraph.
Last paragraph, she lifted her head up to the sky and saw everything white. It's my turn, she thought. Fear made her quickly lower her eyes. The city was still there. So she thought for a moment that it might be her turn.
Yeah.
I guess you could read an ambiguity there, right? The city is still there, but she can't see it. But I've always read that as you know, for a moment. It's kind of like if you've ever been in a really dark room where there's one tiny pinpoint source of light, and you just look away from it. And you think, are my eyes open or are they closed? And then you look over and you see the little prick of light.
I genuinely thought, you know, that it's that last, it's those last five words. The city was still there.
Mm-hmm.
I've just blanked them out and just assumed she was going blind.
Yeah. Well, she thought so too, right?
And I thought, oh, that's great. She's going to go blind now. And I thought that was a really good twist to the book that I've just made up.
Yeah. Well, I'll have to see if either of us check out the sequel. Maybe we can reconvene for a for a 10-minute discussion.
Or read it in the original Portuguese to make sure that's the...
There we go. You know, I have a friend from work who's from Brazil.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
But weirdly, I read the Brazilian book I read was a dystopian book as well. Mm. And it's very similar. It's kind of, it's dark, it's miserable, and it follows the life of one guy who just has the worst life. He just has the worst luck, and things go wrong for him all the time.
Mm.
And it's written, it's quite similar in the way that everything's really well described. Like there's like 4 or 5 pages just on, because he's so thirsty, he has a drink of water, and it's just his body reacting to having a gulp of water and all it, feeling it down his throat and into his stomach and feeling rejuvenated.
Mm.
And it's just incredible. And it's really well written, but, you know, the story's a bit, you know, not much happens.
Oh, what's the novel?
And Still the Earth.
Okay. Anything else you want to say about this novel?
No. I think we've covered everything, and I think the style and the content are great.
Do you recommend it?
Depends to who. I think someone who reads more literary stuff, then yeah.
Yeah.
To a science fiction fan, probably not.
Mm.
A science fiction fan who wants to read something more literary and challenging, then yeah.
Yeah.
I'd recommend it. But I'm glad you recommended it to me. And this isn't my kind of book.
All right, good.
So, yeah. So, yes, I would recommend it.
Yeah, yeah.
If you don't like it, then it's not my fault.
Yeah, and I'm kind of the same way. And this is why we haven't covered it for Take Me to Your Reader, because I think Colin would hate it. He hates so much of the stuff we do anyway that I'm like, I don't want to inflict this on him. And some of the triggering content, I think, you know, I know him as a friend and know, you know, this wouldn't be good for you. I, on the other hand, like, I think the book's absolutely brilliant. And so I do recommend it to people, but you do have to have those big caveats about, oh, by the way, you know, there's no punctuation. So my friend JW, who's been on the podcast a few times, he reads so many books, and he was lamenting on a Discord that we're both on about this book that had a super lack of punctuation. I'm like, oh, if you think that's good, you should read Blindness. And he went, nope, pass.
I would recommend it to certain people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Over 18s only.
Yeah, definitely. Let's talk briefly about the movie, because I do feel like it's quite a straight adaptation. It feels shorter than the book, right?
Yeah.
If the timeline feels shorter as well, where it's pretty quick that the blind hoodlums start to assert themselves and everything goes all Lord of the Flies. But like the depictions of the squalor of the place are very good in the movie. And I feel like it's still not quite what was described in the book. Like it's an order of magnitude even worse in the book.
Yeah, the book is, yeah.
Yeah.
Very descriptive.
And it's a pretty good cast here too, because you have Mark Ruffalo as the doctor and Julianne Moore as the doctor's wife.
Yeah.
And then Danny Glover is the man with the back eye patch and what is her name?
Alice.
Alice Braga. Yeah.
Yeah. I looked it up.
Yeah. Yeah. And she plays the girl with the dark glasses. Pretty good cast. And, you know, it's not a movie that did much business at all. I don't know if it was a film festival kind of thing or what.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. I can't remember it being released.
Yeah.
I guess whoever, you know, the actors must have really liked the book or really liked the script.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But I don't think the movie was ever going to be a big money spinner.
No, I don't think so. And so like, I would also say to people who are like, I'm not sure that I'd enjoy this book. Well, I mean, you could watch the movie. It's an abridgment of it, but it hits the major points.
Yeah. And I can't see anybody watching the movie and then going, I really want to read the book now.
Right. Right. Did you, did the book have the moment in it? I remember in the movie at some point, the Mark Ruffalo character is like, all right, well, you know, if you want to volunteer for this, raise your hand. And then he's like, sorry, that was stupid.
I can't remember.
I can't actually count your hands because I can't see.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't remember if that was in the book or not, but yeah, I remember the scene in the film. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's definitely a novel worth reading. And this is one that, you know, I had on my list just because I'd kind of wanted to cover it for Take Me to Your Reader for a while, but I know Colin well enough that I think, no, maybe we won't do that one. So thank you for doing a mini Take Me to Your Reader with me.
Oh, no, it works. Yeah. It's a crossover of three podcasts.
Yes, absolutely. you said you had some remaining quiz from Glasgow that you wanted to give me.
So there was three rounds that we didn't have time for.
All right.
Let me just pull that up. Dun, 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 dun. So the three rounds are, stop doing that.
So people listening to this, you have to let me know if you do better than I do.
Yeah. And there's big bonus round. I'm going to put in a couple of bonus questions, which get you big, big points.
Oh, all right. All right.
Yeah. So the rounds are weapons, numbers, and time travel.
Okay. 42. Sorry.
that's question one. So I'm going to give you a number. All right. And you have to give me what that refers to.
Okay.
Now, there's a point for this question. Mm-hmm. Or there's 9 bonus points if you get it as the book. So, you know, most people give the generic answer, but that's slightly inaccurate.
Okay.
There is a more accurate answer to
give. I think I know what you're going for.
Oh, God. Go on then. 42.
42. The ultimate answer to life, the universe, and everything. Is that not quite right?
It's the answer to the question of life, the universe, and everything. So I give you 5 points for
that. Okay, all right.
Because you know that it's the answer rather than it's... Most people say it's the meaning of life. Well, right. It's not the meaning of life. It's the answer to the question of the meaning of life. 88.
88 miles per hour. Back to the Future.
Yep.
Yeah.
Perfect. 1984.
I'm assuming that's George Orwell.
The year in which George Orwell's book is set. Mm-hmm. 2001.
A Space Odyssey?
Yep. Most of them were dead easy. Mm-hmm. This is the easy round for the Worldcon quiz.
Nice.
There's only one hard one, which is 3,720 to 1.
Ah, that's the odds of successfully navigating an asteroid field.
That was word perfect.
Thank you. Empire Strikes Back. I've seen that movie so many times. So the odds of successfully navigating an asteroid field are approximately 3,720 to 1.
Yeah, yeah. So I wasn't sure if anyone would get that. I thought that one might be too hard to get.
Yeah, but no.
Good work. Mm-hmm. Excellent work. So we're going on to weapons. So I'm going to give you the name of a weapon.
Okay.
You need to tell me the film, book, or TV series that it's from.
Okay.
The Noisy Cricket.
That is Men in Black.
That is Men in Black.
I feel like I'm going to break this damn thing.
The Lawgiver.
Judge Dredd?
Judge Dredd. My pronunciation might be wrong on this one.
Okay.
Bat'leth.
A bat'leth is a pointy object from Klingon warfare in Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Yep. Yeah. Again, the pronunciation might be wrong on this one as well, but Mjolnir.
Oh, that's Thor's hammer, right?
That is Thor's hammer. Mm-hmm. A sonic screwdriver.
That is Doctor Who. I have seen sufficient, you know, like 3 episodes of Doctor Who, enough to know that. So.
Perfect. That's 100% so far.
Sweet.
And 4 bonus points. So this is time travel machines. I'm going to give you a device which allows you to time travel. Mm-hmm. You need to give me the film or TV series.
I feel like I should do well with this.
Book. A British police box.
Call box, right? Yeah, that's Doctor Who.
That is Doctor Who. An American telephone box.
That is Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, Bogus Journey, and, you know,
Yeah.
Whatever.
Perfect.
Else. Yeah.
A GMC DeLorean.
That's Back to the Future.
That's Back to the Future.
I don't think I knew it was GMC.
Yeah, GMC.
Mm, interesting.
Do you know the... for a bonus point, what's the license plate?
Out of Time.
Yeah. Okay. A hot tub.
Hot tub time machine?
Yeah. If I'd have said jacuzzi, would you have got hot tub? Would you have got that?
Yeah.
Damn it, I should have said jacuzzi.
Yeah.
The Way Back.
Oh, this is like a kid's show, right?
Yeah.
The Way Back.
It's animated.
It's animated. I can't come up with it. The professor or Peabody?
No. Yeah. He's not a professor, though.
I can't quite come up with it.
Professor Peabody and Sherman.
Sherman. Okay. All right. Partial credit.
Yeah, that's, yeah. And the bonus point for this is a cooling cup of coffee. This is a 10-pointer.
A cooling cup of coffee?
Depends how much Japanese science fiction time travel you've read.
Not very much, evidently. It's not All You Need Is Kill, I imagine.
It's Before the Coffee Gets Cold. It's a really good, it's a book of five series of really quite emotional time travel books about, you know, you go sit in a cafe and you order a coffee, and before your coffee gets cold, you can visit somebody that was already in that cafe. Really, really cool books.
Oh, nice.
They made me cry. They're really, really moving stories. Mm. But yeah, really good.
Was this something you did for your podcast?
No, I just, I haven't done it for the podcast, but I probably will choose. There's so many Japanese science fiction books.
Yeah.
And these were, the first one in the series was available on Audible. Mm. So I downloaded it and then I bought a few more. Mm. And then my son's really into Japanese stuff. Mm. So he recommended the book as well. So yeah, he read like books 2 and 3 and I read 1 and 4 and stuff. And they do all interconnect, and they're really quite clever. Yeah. You can read them as individual stories.
But. Yeah, I love that though, the father and son kind of dynamic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So yeah, you got 100% on that quiz.
All right.
I feel like I made it too easy.
You saved the hard ones for.
I did do the hard ones at WorldCon because
I was thrown off by the way you pronounced LaForge. You said LaForge, and for some reason it did not compute. And I'm like that.
Oh yeah, my wife's French.
Oh, so nice. Okay.
Anytime there's a French word, she says it in full French mode.
Ah.
You know, she doesn't speak English with an accent at all. Mm. But yeah, when she says a French word, it's full French mode. Yes. So
yeah.
LaForge. I naturally overpronounce things in the French way.
Right. I don't know if this is common in the US, but we will often kind of riffing off of Keeping Up Appearances, the British comedy show.
Yeah.
You know, oh, it's bouquet, darling, you know.
Yeah.
And we don't go to Target, we go to Target. Yeah. So.
Yeah, same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's brilliant. Well done.
Nice. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for the remainders of the quiz. So
no, that's fine.
Yeah. All right. Where can people find you, Andy? You've recently moved off of one particular.
Yeah, I moved off Twitter because I found Elon Musk quite distasteful.
Yeah.
Recently, so I'm not giving him any of my internet space.
Nice.
So I'm on Blue Sky, and it's just SFATW. Blue Sky or however you do on Blue Sky.
I'll put a link in there.
Slowly getting used to it.
Yeah. Anything you're working on right now for the podcast? Anything, any upcoming stuff that's going to be coming out in, you know, November?
Yeah. So probably before this, I'll have done one with Damo. We're going to do...
Oh, fun.
Yeah. So we're going to do Cloud of Desolation, which is a really... I've just had a series of really bleak dystopian science fiction books from around the world. So when I read Blindness, it was just like, oh God, I just want to read something with spaceships and aliens and, you know, different planets.
Now, is this a book from Ireland or is this a...
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Nice.
And there's very few and the books, it's a really rare book. And Damon was like, oh, I'll just send you a copy of my book, and just send it me back. And in the end, I did find a book online, a secondhand copy, but yeah, they're really rare.
Yeah.
But it's just bleak and miserable.
One of the cool things about the podcast is like is seeing people who I know like know each other because of my podcast or because of my podcast and others. Yeah. And it's cool to get to see people interact. And so it was nice that you guys hadn't met before WorldCon, right?
No. Yeah. So at WorldCon, it was great. So after your live podcast, we went and sat in the bar for a bit.
Nice.
Yeah. Had a great time.
Cool.
Yeah. He's good fun. He's really good fun.
And
just knows his stuff as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's really good.
Yep.
But yeah, you can find me on that, and I'll send you a link to my website because I can never remember what it is.
Yeah, sounds good.
Even searching for it, I don't find it.
All right,
and I know exactly what it's called.
Yeah. All right. Well, Andy, thank you so much for doing this and being flexible. I think I've been stringing you along for a couple of months. Yeah, I'll get to that. I sent you a ping. I think right when I got back from Scotland, and I was sick.
Oh, that's fine. I'm super flexible as well, so. Makes no sense.
Awesome. Cool. All right. Well, talk again sometime.
Yeah.
All right.
It's really quite different to Western stuff. Can you hear my cat?
You have a visitor behind you.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. If that gets too annoying, I'll just kick her out.
Okay. It's like, hey, let me out that microphone.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to kick her out. She's been a pain. Okay. She's just not going to stop.
Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that discussion with Andy. You know, kind of a different discussion when we do the SASPIX episodes. Don't do quite the same structure as the normal award winners. But, you know, Blindness is a book that I definitely do recommend with caveats, and the caveats are in the discussion. So let me know if this is a book that you've read, or if it's a movie that you've seen, and what you thought about it. So do make sure to check out Andy's podcast, Sci-Fi Around the World. I have been on it one time, and then Andy and I talked another time on my podcast about his podcast. And so if you want to check out kind of what he's doing there, you can look back in my feed for Sci-Fi Around the World, and or just search Andy's name on my website, and you'll find that episode. As always, if you want to support the podcast and support things that I do in my other podcasting as well, you can go to patreon.com/Hugo's podcast and sign up to support there if you would like. You can also buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/Seth Heasley. All those links are in the show notes. And, you know, of course, share the podcast with your friends, post it on social media if you're enjoying it. And, you know, if you're out there and you've never reached out to me and you want to say hi, you'll find that I'm a pretty affable guy. Shoot me an email and I will respond. Feedback@hugospodcast.com. Unless you just want to tell me that you don't like my podcast, in which case you can keep that to yourself. And if you'd like to leave a review, especially a good one, then go for it. That'd be great. Although I never do read them out on the show, and I very rarely look at them, but I appreciate it when anybody does leave one. All right. I think that's going to do it for this time. So thank you so much for listening, and I'll talk to you next time. The theme music for the Hugo's There podcast was composed and performed by Tim Cuskey.